honest, yes, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, lads, we have so much to get through today. There's no chance we're going to keep this to an hour. We've Aidan Forker coming up on the show, and we've Cheddar coming up on the show, and we've got a whole load of club games to get through. But there's only one place to start, and that has to be Mahery's surprise rather than shock win in Armagh. It's the first time Cross have been defeated in a final since 1982. And an incredible stat that Niall McKay from Gaelic Life had. Wait till you hear this. So today... this yesterday, it was Cross McGlenn's 40th county, provincial or All-Ireland final since 1996. That's an incredible stat in itself. Mm-hmm. Before yesterday, they only lost one of them. It was the 09 All-Ireland final to Kilmacud Crokes, Conan. We're talking about Mahery almost doing the impossible since 1996.
Really? Like, it really is. Like, Cross McGlenn get the finals and they win, and they usually hammer teams. Like, that's including 11 Ulster finals in that as well. They play a team from six different counties. And like most of those games, well, they weren't decided by one score. Like, you know, Cross McGlenn had just beaten the teams by 5, 6, 7 points and went through their like Armagh titles as well. So it was 21 titles since 96. And only 4 of them were decided by one score. They were just hammering teams. Like, and they had that aura and that assurance when they get to a final, they win. And like, that really does show the scale of it. For Mahery to do it in Armagh, not an All-Ireland final, to do it here, like, shows like how much they had to sort of come up to that level.
Exactly. And like, I mean, to be fair to Mahery, they won it for the first ever time in 2016, but they didn't beat Cross McGlenn that year. Cooley Hanna beat Cross McGlenn in the semi-final, and then Mahery went and beat them in the final, Connor. So like, I mean, this is just almost perfection for Mahery to win it for the second ever time, you know, 4 years later, but to get Cross in the final and beat them.
Nearly like there's an asterisk on any title in Armagh if you don't begin on the way, isn't there? And the way they won it too, I mean, like, I know they got 4 goals in the end, but they were behind at half time. And when you're behind to a team that hasn't lost their own county title since 1982 and hasn't lost any final of note, or one final of note, was it, since 1996? That's absolutely crazy. So you can imagine the belief and the character that that Mahery had to have to bring it home. Like, I remember I did say that I think Mahery beat them in the league just after the games came back and after lockdown, or whether that game was going to matter or anything. But so they did have that kind of history, beating Cross again not too long ago. But at the manner in which they won it was fantastic, and just great to see that there was, you know, so many fans there to see, maybe 400 at the ground to watch it. But it makes so much of a difference when you're so used to watching games behind closed doors these days. So it's just a breath of fresh air.
Three of the 4 goals were great goals, Conan. Brendan Heavren was with an early goal. They went 1-1 to no score up. This was just a rocket from the wing back who came up supported. Brian Fox's goal is going to be the most underrated goal of the day because he'd lost control of it and he was kind of soccer style. Apparently he's a soccer player, flicked it under the goalie. But whoever flicked the ball up into his hands to get him away, I couldn't tell what number it was. It looked like a subs number. It was just a lovely little deft flick to send him away, put it over. And then Aidan Forker's goal, which was sensational. And like, I mean, you're talking about catching a mark. You can easily tap that over there. But, you know, goals win games. They got 4. And for me, Forker's goal was the goal that would make you think that this was definitely something they talked about, is we need goals to beat these.
There were so many things with that Forker goal as well that you couldn't have liked if he had a tuck the other option. So he could have taken the mark, he could have fist passed it over, or he could have fist passed it across to Ronan Lappin, I think, who wasn't too happy that he didn't pass it to him, and he didn't even look impressed when the ball hit the net. He just had his hands out. And like, he got his goal, and after, I think that's the one that you're saying it wasn't that good. It was just a palmed in. But that, like, that goal from Forker, I think, and like, in fairness, the Fox one as well, it summed up what sort of attitude that Mahery brought. Like, they were going at them, and they probably sensed, we need to get goals here to win this. He got 4 and they only won by 4 in the end. So like, that's probably the best bit of evolution I think has happened over the last few years, is players, forwards, turning on the ball and just going at players, because some of them will let you by if you go at them with enough intent. And like, that was great to see.
Yeah, well, exactly, which is just as well we were talking about Aidan Forker, because he's after joining us on the line here. Aidan, we're talking about your goal and how much trouble you would have been in if that hadn't hit the back of the net because you had a man over.
Yeah, funny. He pulled me after the game and said, "Did you hear what I was shouting to you?" And I said, "No." And he goes, "You're lucky you scored that." He wasn't congratulating me. He says, "You're lucky you scored that there," because I was going through. No, but thankfully it went in.
Well, it did went in, but this is the thing, Aidan, and I'm wondering, like, did you talk about goals? Were they a big focus for you? Because you had a handy attacking mark there, which, you know, at that stage of the game would have been nice to tap over, but, like, it was in your head the minute you caught that goal.
Yeah, no, listen, all credit probably to Finn Moe. He never really has coached the mark too much, and he sort of, I actually had texted him last Saturday night and said, you know, big week coming up, anything you think I need to work on or focus on, give me a shout, like. And he pulled me in training on Sunday and said, you know, think about, don't just be content and winning the ball, taking a mark or winning the ball and chipping, going under your left foot. He says, take the ball and try and dip down and underneath and go direct and see what it opens up for you. So that was sort of in my head all week, and I tried it a couple of times in the game and they never really come off, but thankfully, I knew I was one-on-one, and it was a good ball that I watched coming in. And listen, I was just hoping to get it on target, to be honest with you. What was going through my head, I'm just going to smash it here. And thankfully, I went into the corner.
Yeah, geez, it was a brilliant goal for a corner back anyways. I'll talk to you about that.
But like, attacking cornerback.
I'm an attacking cornerback. I don't know what geezer's thinking, but I'm going to get onto that in a little while. We're reading a stat there on the show. It was Cross McGlenn's 40th county provincial or All-Ireland final since 1996. So they're in 40 since 1996, and the only one they lost was to Kilmacud, the All-Ireland final. They hadn't lost the final in Armagh since '82. Like, were you aware of these kind of stats before the game?
No, not really. There wasn't any chat of it at all, to be honest with you. And Mahari boys, sort of outside of Mahari, they don't really care too much. They don't really follow. Like, some boys would and some boys wouldn't. So I'd say maybe half of us boys would have maybe known some of the stats around Cross's record in finals. And if it did rear its head, it wouldn't be long being put to bed by Finn. And, you know, he's a good man for making sure that we're just focusing on ourselves, you know. And listen, records are to be broken. It's an incredible record, an incredible team, incredible club, obviously. And, you know, we're just glad to be on the right side of it. You know, I think the stars aligned yesterday. We were going well all week, and all the niggles were cleared up that a lot of clubs seem to have at the minute. And, you know, the stars were aligning. You nearly didn't want to admit to yourself that it was going to be a good day because you felt so good going into it. But the goals proved, you know, the winning of the game. Like,
the goal, Fox's goal just before half time was a really important goal. Like, I'm sure the half time team talk, there was a lot more belief in it than there might have been had you been, you know, four down.
Yeah, no, listen, the goals came at critical times.
Yeah,
it was 5 or 6 at one stage, and you know, that's the Cross, like, they just keep chipping points, and before you know it, you're 6 or 7 down before you realise it, thinking that you're still in the game, you know. But no, like, we knew Cross are big starters, and we were lucky we got the goal at the start, and then we got the goal at the stroke of that before the break there, and that kept us, you know, against the wind within touching distance of them and playing down the hill. And we knew we had to go for broke then on the kick out and try and press them as much as we can. And we had a purple patch, and we sort of never really looked back. We just sort of kept that distance, thankfully.
Yeah. So where's this team come from, Aidan? Like, I mean, I was looking, like, there's no huge underage success coming up through the ranks or anything.
No. Mahi's a wee small community. There's probably 200 homes in around this area, like, so, and a lot less families, you know. But no, listen, it's probably the golden era for this club. Like, you know, we would have good quality coming through in ones and twos, but never really as in a team sort of setting. Underage, never really had much success, always playing at sort of intermediate level. And maybe even us boys coming through, we had an amalgamated team, so we had to amalgamate with another club to, you know, obviously make up the numbers. So, you know, we were a product of that system. And no, listen, we always produce good footballers, and it's just about trying to bring one or two through at a time. And, you know, there's a good spread of age ranges in the team, and boys have been about the block for maybe 20 years, and boys who are just coming through, and they're all sort of come together in a good metal pot of a team there the last 5 or 6 years. And we were just trying to capitalize it. It would just been a shame if only you had won one championship, you know, and we sort of had a wee bit of hurt from the 2017 final that we didn't do justice in the second half. And, you know, thankfully we sort of righted a few wrongs then yesterday.
Yeah, he definitely did. And I suppose the one you won in 16, you didn't beat Cross McGlynn on the way. That was done for you. You know, then you beat Cooleyanna, wasn't it? Cooleyanna.
Yeah.
And then you beat them in the final. So I suppose this is just a perfect championship to win there.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of chat about that after, and you know, you had heard a few murmurs of people saying that you didn't beat Cross that year and stuff like that. And but your championship medal, the championship medal, you can only beat what's in front of you. And the year we were beat in the final in 17, we'd beat Cross in the semi final, you know. And listen, we've had great ding dust battles with them over the last number of years, like, and it's been always nip and tuck and good competitive games. Great to be involved with a big club like Cross McGlynn and a wee club like ourselves. You know, it's great to be competitive. Like, and our boys weren't content in just being competitive. You know, there's a lot of winners and warriors in our team. Nick, and
yeah,
we showed that yesterday. To be fair,
you mentioned Finney and Moriarty, who's your manager this year. What's he brought to the setup?
Oh, listen, Finn's, I know I've played with Finn, and he's a teammate of mine, and he's obviously stepped away from playing and obviously has aspirations of going on and coaching. And it was sort of it was an element of risk at the time when our other manager who had won us the championship in 2016 took us to the final in 17, and he sort of felt like he took us as far as he could. And then a few of the boys had met and Finn's name was thrown into the table, and you know, my only input there was saying, look, you could find Finn in a county job in 15 years time and regret not giving him a chance at the start of his own coaching career, you know. And you know, that sort of made up their mind. He went and apparently he interviewed quite well and he showed a great appetite, but listen, he's absolutely meticulous in his preparation, the same as he was as a player, and you know, no stone was left unturned, and very much a player-driven type of leadership, and his analysis and his coaching was sort of second to none, you know. And you know, we have a good group of leaders in this team who are really trying to push the thing on. And Finn was always saying, "This is your team, and whatever I can do to facilitate that." And you know, it was just really what our boys needed. It was a real breath of fresh air, you know.
Right, fantastic. So how were the celebrations last night? Like, I mean, the pubs and everything are open for you, so there's no hiding around corners or pretending you're eating a dinner for €9 or whatever the rest of the team's.
There was a wee bit of that because our club was closed. They made a call during the week that they were going to close the club no matter what happened. So our club is very small. So it was because the whole COVID thing, you know.
well, I know that, but why? Why? Like, they're just because of go on.
And just because there've been the people flocking to the place, if no matter what, if you had one lose or draw, so they sort of had to make a call on it. It's a very small club, you know. And
that was the club bar, was it, or the club house?
Yeah, the club club, you know, where everyone would have went originally. So we ended up going to the community hall, and the players sat down for a bite to eat, and then we had a bit of a parade walking down to the main pitch, and everyone was outside. Fully social distance, of course, and did all that, and the crack was good. It was a lovely evening. It was lovely and warm. The sun was shining, and everyone was on a high. It was great.
Right. Okay. So, like, I mean, it was comparable to 16. I suppose 16 was just crazy in comparison. You could maybe enjoy the night a bit better. Yeah.
Oh no! Listen, it was just you know, that sense of contentment. You know, you did yourself justice, and you were. You know, you knew you could win it. You know, 2016, there was maybe an element of, you know, that we lacked belief. You know, the club had never won before in its history, and there was a wee bit of that, you know, in the back of your head, are we ever going to get one? But once that was over in 2016, you know, we didn't lack belief from any other year from then on in. And yesterday, we didn't lack any belief, you know. But
yeah,
no, listen, it was different. It was different as it was going to be, but it was still special. Like, you know, just having a few beers and, you know, knowing that you've went to the pinnacle of the county or the club scene, with your friends and your family, it's special.
Yeah, so you scored 1-3 yesterday, like an absolutely brilliant goal, fielding it over your head, turning your man, sticking it into the bottom corner, and you kicked 2 other points from play. And now you're going to go back training with the county team to man-mark the best player on another team. How are you going to get your head? How are you going to get your head around this?
I haven't really given much thought. Obviously, it's in the back of your head when you're training away. And with the club that the county's coming up, and I'm obviously back and forth for the boys a lot, so chatting away. So, listen, it'll be a transition back. You never know what Kieran has in his head for you, but he's a funny way of convincing you whatever he needs done. But listen, I'm happy as long as I'm in the team. I'm happy and to do whatever needs done for the team. And I was going rightly before the lockdown, and stringing a few decent performances together, but like I said to start, it's an attacking number four role. It's not just a cornerback, man, working out.
Very important. But this is the thing, right? So I could see when you went wing back, I could kind of understand that, because you can play anywhere for the club, you know, and you can play wing forward, that's fine, and there's not too much difference. How did he convince you to go in cornerback? He must have thrown that little attacking cornerback carrot in front of you to help you to accept it. Because let's be honest, you could be all as attacking as you want, but if he doesn't follow you, there's a pretty, you know, there's a risk there too.
Yeah. No, listen, I think it was a case of sort of need must at a time. We were sort of a lot of injuries and carrying people, and
nice.
Kieran sort of said, Aidan, you're going to have to go in there. So I was saying, right, no bother, whatever. And probably the worst thing I did was start to play decently. but I enjoy it. I don't mind it at all. It's a different challenge, different role, and you know, it forces you to adjust a wee bit. And I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying my football wherever I'm playing, and I know there's quality all around me, and where else would you rather be, and playing with quality players and against quality teams, and we're hoping obviously to push on again this year and see where we can get to.
I was reading something, I think it could have been Rio Ferdinand's book. I don't think I read it, but I read an extract out of it. And he used to play up front when he was younger. He was a striker.
That's right, yeah.
And he was saying that it took him nearly a full season to get the buzz of the defending side, you know, to actually go, we kept a clean sheet, that's where my buzz is now. Did you find a little bit of a mental kind of, adaptation before you started going, Jesus, you know, I've kept them scoreless and that's as good a buzz as scoring a goal? Is that ever possible?
No, but I think that's probably where, you know, being a forward all my life, going back in there, you have that different mentality where you're trying to put your opposition player on the back foot no matter what, you know what I mean? So I think that could be an advantage in the role. Obviously, you're going to be annoyed if he kicks any points off you, like, and that's pretty much the main goal as a defender. But I think a philosophy I've tried to develop is kind of like, if I score more than him, I've done better, you know what I mean? My net value to the play is better than his, so that could be a bit of a mindset that I would have. But I think it can be an advantage, but obviously your number one rule is defending. So and like we try to play an attacking style of football, and Kieran's happy for me to try and push forward and break lines if I can. And obviously if my man's giving bother, then I'm going to be challenged on it. But no, listen, it's a new challenge, it's good, and we'll see where it takes me.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, we talk a lot about attacking cornerbacks on the show. They're a new phenomenon, but I'm not sure whether I'm fully an attacking cornerback dragging Rian O'Neill the whole way to your end of the field is not exactly what I like to see at the same time. But that's the way the tactics have gone in it now, though, isn't it, Aidan? Like, I mean, you going forward, even if you don't get the ball, you're dragging a really good forward somewhere where he doesn't want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone has a role. Like when you have the ball, you're an attacker. Like, and that would be Kieran's philosophy. You know,
yeah.
When you don't have the ball, you've heard that before. Like, everyone's a defender, but you flip it on its head that when you do have the ball, everyone has an option to attack. And I think whatever role you play in the game now, you're just going to bring your own qualities to that role, no matter where it is. You know, so
yeah,
it's an exciting time for the game. I think. we sort of came full circle around, you know, the defensive game and stuff, and now the teams who are having a go and trying to play faster transition football forward are the teams that, and maybe committing a few more numbers to attack, are the teams that are going to do well.
So what's the plan? I'm sure you'll be meeting up with the lads. You're in work today, unfortunately. I don't know how you did it. And then Geezer wants you back on Thursday. Is that your immediate plan for the week? Not getting too nosy here.
No, he actually texted me last night just saying, well done. There was no chat of going into training or nothing, but he knows I'll be back on him ready. But I'd say that sooner rather than later. You know, it'll be competitive going in, boys will be chomping at it, and I'll be keen to try and get in there and get meeting the boys and get training together again and seeing what way we're shaping up, you know. And listen, I'll enjoy a couple of days to myself and at home with family and a few friends here, and sort of try and soak it in a wee bit and go from there. But listen, I'm excited to get back in, to be fair, and it's a long time coming. So and the games are coming, going to be coming thick and fast, like, so you can't really rest in your laurels too much.
They will, exactly. Come here, I'll let you back to your teammates there. Aidan, thanks very much for taking the call and congratulations yesterday.
Thanks a million, Molly. No bother.
All right, great stuff from Aidan there. In the other county final of the day, it was in Antrim Hurling. It was the one on television early. This, I know you mentioned, Connor, about the Armagh one having supporters and stuff, but this was actually on television. One thing, at least they had supporters. At least there was a bit of atmosphere at it. There was a pitch invasion at the end of it. It felt like a county final. But without being a little worrier about this, Conan, there was no social distancing whatsoever because all the crowd just gathered in together in a big pile in the middle of the terrace.
Yeah, pitch invasion. There's players being lifted up on shoulders as well. there were kids behind there. Sorry, I know you hit the word kids. There were children behind the net. Like that makes a class as well. But they were all just jumping around on top of each other every time a goal went in. And like it was in Ballycastle too, you know. So you think about all those things that Ronan Glynn was talking about, being worried about people coming into the one exit, or whatever. There only is one way in of Ballycastle and one way out of it. So I think they just sort of floated it all for the day up there.
Yeah, I think we're all over this. Like, I mean, this game was over probably at halftime because there was a very strong wind in it, and Dunloy were level at halftime. A huge goal just before halftime. It was from Kevin Malloy, and it was one of the best goals you'd ever see, where he fainted to shoot and brought the ball back in. It was a dummy solo in hurling, Connor. I just put it into language that you can understand.
Thanks, Willie. Did he get the final? Did he get the final touch to it? That was, I wasn't sure.
Well, you know, no, like Conal Cunning. They call him Kobe. He tried to claim it. It was the most outrageous claim. That ball had crossed the line. Like, imagine trying to take a wonder goal off your midfielder and come out and celebrate that goal.
It reminded me of that time. Remember when Cristiano Ronaldo did score that amazing goal for Portugal a couple of years ago? It was ruled off for offside because Nani got a header to the ball just as it was about to go into the net. But whatever about that, whatever about trying to claim it, he could have just got out of the way because Malloy had all the momentum and he was going to get there anyway. But Cunning just nipped in at the end, and whether he got a touch to it, I don't know. But that was Malloy's goal all day, and what a goal too! And what a goal and what a performance he was brilliant. He was, I don't know if he got man the match, but he looked it to me all ends up.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. Their manager Gregory O'Kane said after the game that they won the toss and decided to go against the wind. Just shows the confidence of this Dunloy team. They're known for having confidence. He says we wanted to start strong and we have a lot of pace through the lines. It probably suits a team like us to go against the breeze. The use of the ball, putting it to hand and then running it through, it was first class. I would probably say the first 50 minutes set the tone for us to go on and win it. I thought that was a feature of the game, the way Dunloy used the ball. And listen, it's not a secret that the way to play hurling now isn't always to put the hurley through it. It's to go through the lines, and they're all doing that. And especially against the wind, it makes sense. It's like, listen, it's similar to Gaelic football tactics, and hurling's finally copped on that Gaelic football is tactically way ahead of it, Conan.
Well, that's it. Like, and if you look at some of the scores, like Keenan Malloy put in an exhibition of score taking, but he was being teed up very nicely. Like, he was hitting them from all angles, but he had them in nice distances away. Like, there was nothing absolutely outrageous. He was just on song, and that's because it was build-up play. Like, very few times, I think, in the Ballyhale game, which I know we'll talk about, like, was the ball just being lumped forward like 70-80 yards and somebody trying to compete and try to put it over from there. There's a bit more thought to it, and it's good to see hurling's catching up with football now.
This will go down well to the hurling snobs who have stuck with us throughout three football people talking about hurling. We'll be back in business very soon with the hurling pundits back. So don't just stay with us for a while longer, and we'll be back soon. Liam Watson retired again after the game. He said he had a smile on his face all day. You can't win them all. He over and out. He didn't have a very good day, to be honest. But look, let's be honest. Dunleavy were by far the better team and were convincing winners. They would have gone on now to play Slocknail, who won the Derry County final for the eighth time in a row. But obviously, that's all called off. So all you're getting this year, lads, is your county medal. So don't be giving out. Second game on TV yesterday, lads. This was an excellent first half, standard-wise. Not so excellent second half, standard-wise. But it all kind of burst into this controversial ending where Ballymun self-imploded and ruined what was a brilliant win for them, and a county final coming up. They're definitely without Davy Byrne, who needs his head examined. I've enough of that fella now. I've been on the field with that fella loads of times, and there's no ever defending that fella. He's just a loose cannon on the field. He's got no head about him. He goes uppercutting a fella with his jersey pulled up over his head when he's 5 points up, and you're going into a county final. That's brain dead now. And I had a good feeling of some of the things I saw him doing on a field. So he's gone now. And I think Ballymun should cut their losses with that fella. Jason Whelan will probably be gone as well. He decided to eye gouge. Leon Young got sent off as well. It doesn't look like I couldn't see what he did wrong. And, you know, by the way he was pleading would make you think maybe it was mistaken identity. But it was the Crokes number five, O'Connor, I think it was. He kind of went to poke Jason Whelan in the eye. I don't know what he was doing. Where's coming into people's heads that even your instinct would even think to poke a fella in the eye? Maybe the game's moved on and I'm too old now at this stage. Whelan then wrestled him to the ground and said, I'll show you how to eye gouge, and went straight up for his eyes. And as the young fella was wriggling around trying to break free on the ground. Just disgusting scenes, Conan. And sometimes you wonder, will Ballymun ever learn? And just imagine, all you had to do was laugh at the Kilmacud Crokes lads, because they were the ones that were livid at that stage.
That's it, because Davy Byrne was coming off and he was having a bit of a laugh himself and joking, and I was like, that's not the time to laugh. Like, you should have just waited until full time, or you should have just been laughing when they were trying to confront you, or when you were holding on to them. I can only assume. I think what happened was, you know, Kilmacud had a kick out and Ballymun were trying to hold on to them to stop winning the ball, and it just went too far. And you're right, like, that's a fair assessment of the Jason Whelan thing. Like, that did look disgusting. It's very, very hard to see that, a player on the ground and, you know, eyes being gouged out. But Keane O'Connor did seem to go for his face first, and it was like Whelan just saw red when that happened. And as you say, it was, I'll show you how to do it. But either way, for none of them, like, it's not a good thing. I don't know what comes into your head. All I can think of from Keane O'Connor's point of view is, like, Whelan seemed much more physically strong and he couldn't seem to get him off his jersey. You know, so I don't know. I wouldn't go for an eye, but you'd be trying to do something, like, to try and find a weak spot to get somebody's grip loosened on you, because when somebody's stronger, you can feel it, like, you know. So it wasn't nice, and the burn thing was just stupid, because at that stage it had been going on for about a minute, and then he's just swinging a punch when everyone's looking
right in front of the umpires. Like, I mean, you're just basically saying, I don't have any cop on and I'm going to get sent off and miss the county final. Philly McMahon came up and was doing a bit of mouthing to Keane O'Sullivan, and you wouldn't mind to see that. Like, I mean, that's what you want to be doing in a situation, Connor, like that. You're five up, point up at the scoreboard, say, hard luck lads, we've a county final. That will hurt them a lot more than bloody trying to uppercut a chap with his head covered, pulling his jersey up over his head and throwing a few uppercuts.
Yeah, Dean Rock was at him as well. Dean Rock and Kieran O'Sullivan were having a few pushes against each other as well, which again was harmless compared to...
You don't mind that, yeah? You don't mind that? That's going to happen.
That's harmless compared to the other. You nearly like to see it, because you're like, you know, it's all county, you know, county friendships are set aside here. It's club friendship is the way it should be under the circumstances. But, like, Jesus, how many times have you heard it said it to you? Do you know that, like, when you're in a position like that, just do not do anything stupid. Like, a club like Ballymun, I know you've talked about their history there, Willie. But, like, you know, a club like Ballymun, with their experience, the amount of county finals they've been in, the amount of experience they have throughout the team, not just their county players, to get involved in that sort of shit. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know, was it the case that, like, the likes of Philly McMahon couldn't get there quick enough to tell them to cop on? Because the worst that happened at that stage, Jason Whelan and your man were on the ground, and the fellas had dived in, and then Davy Byrne got involved with your man. And the worst thing about that was, like it was shown up completely on the TG Carr cameras, but it nearly seemed to me like Jason Wheeler or Davey Byrne thought he was doing it on the sly, you know, because he had your man's jersey pulled over his head at that stage. So just desserts for Davey Byrne. I don't know what your man, I don't know what the number seven did. I don't think anyone has a clue. So he'll probably
Leon Young. Yeah, I just wondered
then what's the protocol with Jason Whelan? Is it because that the video evidence will be so damning that he'll have to get done, or is it the fact that he was booked by the referee? Does that override?
I don't think that does, because I'd say the referee booked him for wrestling to the ground. So if the referee says he was unaware of any eye gouging, Jason Whelan has a case tensor. That's my understanding of it, Conan. Am I right with that? I think that's right. The referee did deal with it, but not to the extent of what actually happened.
Yeah, I just hope the referee didn't give a yellow card and write down eye gouging on his book.
That would be absolutely crazy. But listen, I wouldn't mind. Jason Whelan fucking came on, played great in the second half, like he did the last day. I just watched this because I have a bit of a graph for Ballymun. I like them. If you have these two or three players who consistently let Ballymun down, and you know, Philly McMahon talking about Ballymun's reputation and stuff like this game, and it's not fair. And this game was on TV yesterday, and the whole country saw that. That's just the height of stupidity, and it's very hard to defend it. So, there were some other talking points out of the game, lads. Mannion and Dean Rock missing penalties. Imagine that. How Dean Rock had to take a penalty. Such a decision from the referee. James McCarthy bearing down on goal, about to kick it into the net. The goalkeeper tried to trip him up, and I think the referee thought he was so clever that he spotted the trip, that he went, it's a penalty and that's it, I've called it, I saw the trip, and just about to kick the ball in the net, Connor. That could have had a huge bearing on the game. James McCarthy deserved the chance to kick that into the net and that goal stand.
James McCarthy was literally in the net, I think, when we heard the whistle blew. The only thing I can think of is that the referee decided that because he'd blown his whistle that he has to come back. But I don't think, the Kilmacud players had accepted at that stage that a goal was given against them.
There was a goal written all over that the minute James McCarthy threw it to Dean Rock. There's a goal on there, you say. This is a goal.
And then just, if you have to blow your whistle a couple of seconds later, wait a couple of seconds, you can still pull it back for the free. He literally blew the, as I said, James McCarthy was nearly in the net. I think he was maybe on the 6-yard line when he'd actually taken the shot. And when the referee deemed that he was fouled and he blew the whistle. It was an absolutely ridiculous decision, compounded only by, now it wasn't a great penalty. Great save by the keeper to get that height on it with his trailing leg, I thought. But just compounded even more that Dean Rock couldn't even convert the penalty. Absolutely crazy, crazy decision.
Yeah, some weird misses from Dean Rock actually yesterday, which was a surprise. Paddy Small was the outstanding player, I thought, for Ballymun the whole way through the game. A defender's nightmare, just turning around, getting the ball, turning, facing you, and then going at you. Nobody likes that. Even Keane O'Sullivan was trying to drop back, but Keane O'Sullivan was covering the middle and Paddy Small was getting a load of ball out over by the wing, and being able to skin his man. So I thought he was really, really good for Ballymun. And Ballymun deserved to win the game. There's no doubt about that. But, just that last bit at the end would leave a sour taste. Brendan Hackett, their manager, said he didn't see it. He said, I actually didn't see it. And the cards at the end, I don't know what happened. So then you finish up there, that's grand. He didn't see anything. Then he continues, I'm not sure about Leon's. I was actually looking at the backs, but I'd say that'll be appealed because I can't understand what Leon's was for. So how do you not know what Leon's was for if you didn't see anything? Unless Leon, in fairness, you couldn't see anything other than his pure disbelief at why he was getting sent off. So just for that, either he's an Oscar, potential Oscar actor, or Leon got a bit of a raw deal, Conan. I would be leaning towards a little bit that he might have got the raw deal. Although, listen, to be honest with you, I wouldn't put it past a few of them. I don't know Leon well enough to vouch for him.
Well, maybe Brendan Hackett. Maybe Brendan Hackett's just saying there were two red cards. One of them's Davey Byrne. All right, so that one's cancelled out. We're not going to appeal that, but I didn't see it, but I assume it was a red card. And we can maybe appeal Leon one. Maybe he didn't see any of them and he just assumes that Davey Byrne was up to it anyway.
Yeah, a very educated guess, you'd have to say. Right, well, would they be involved in that square? Okay, right, well, no, I'm not going to appeal that, but Leon is not in his makeup. Anyways, there was a county final in Kerry as well yesterday, lads. It's the other county final, Ken Mayer and Austin Stacks. So Ken Mayer, another team of mine, threw it away yesterday. They were 5 points up after 41 minutes and they had a man sent off. And even Austin Stacks went 26 minutes in the second half without scoring. It wasn't a good game. It wasn't an attacking game like the next one we're going to talk about. Then their Stacks are 3 points down. Pretty much one of the last kicks of the game. High ball hopeful to Kieran Donaghy, who's still that effective at this stage of his career, knocks it into the path of Sean Quilter, who finished into the net. Draw match after normal time, extra time. Ken Mayer come back, go 2 points up, and then Austin Stacks take over, and they end up winning it by 3 in the end. So, that's that county final. So Austin Stacks, if there was provincial championships, Austin Stacks will be representing Kerry, because East Kerry play Mid Kerry in the county final. Are you still following me on all of that, Cannon?
Yeah, definitely. Austin Stacks, remember, it would have been suited them better this year, because last year they got thrown in unexpectedly, but this year the two championships running side by side. Ready for it?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a good point. They would have been exactly ready for it. They wouldn't have been stale. But that's the thing. So Ken Mayer threw away a county semi-final against Mid Kerry, and now they're after throwing away the final against Austin Stacks. And then on the other hand, you look at it, they came back from nowhere against Kilmacud or against Dr. Crokes in the semi-final. And remember, they beat Temple No with a goal in the last minute. So I don't know what to think of Ken Mayer. This is a team you need to go watch in person. They throw away leads, they come back on leads. You'll pay money into seeing them. The other one was Mid Kerry beat Crokes. This was after extra time. Absolute drama in this one. A little bit like the Tyrone match we were talking about 2 weeks ago. Mid-Kerry went 4 down. They conceded a goal and a point in the extra time. Usually, Connor, that's the end of you, not Mid-Kerry, which makes it even more surprising. These aren't even a club team. These aren't even club mates. These are a thrown-together team. They came back from nowhere against Ken Mayer in the last round. Now they're 4 points down against Dr. Crokes, and they still have the team spirit to rally from that.
Yeah, and you wonder where they're getting it from. As you said, they're just a divisional team, as opposed to, they'd be used to a couple of training sessions together and stuff, but there's obviously a bond there and great character that they can do that. But I'm just asking, can any team in Kerry hold on to a lead at all? Like, this is just all we're hearing every week, is a team going up and even an extra time and then surrendering it, whether it's Ken Mayer or Dr. Crokes or who else, like Temple Noah, as we said, with Ken Mayer there a while ago as well. But this game sounded like amazing. I was just seeing Tony Lean from the Examiner, who was reporting on it. He called for the county board to put the game up on the Kerry website and for it to be used as a coaching tool. He said it's the one of the best games he's ever seen. So sounded amazing. And then just looking through some of the scores as well, like Crokes didn't have Tony Brosnan. Obviously, we talked about that last week. But then Micheál Byrne steps up and gets 1-5. I'd say from play, I'd say Kieran O'Leary, who might not have been playing if Tony Brosnan had been fit. I think he kicked 5 points for them from play. Gavin O'Grady from Mid Kerry kicked 1-5. This just sounded like an unbelievable game and nearly the complete opposite of what you've described with Ken Mayer and Stacks there as well.
Yeah, well, with the other one, we know how Dr. Crokes liked to play the game. But it was 45 scores in 70 minutes, 6:33 from play. And Dr. Crokes scored 3:19 without Tony Brosnan, Dottie Casey or Jordan Kiley. So, it's some sensational stats coming from that. He said their manager, Peter O'Sullivan, the Mid-Kerry manager, said, "I thought the game was gone after we conceded that 6-point lead. We got a good impact from the bench again. We nearly have too many players, but we go horses for courses. It's a great problem to have." And this is these divisional teams, Conan. We nearly have too many players, he says. Maybe that's why they're able to come back. They have a big bench that a club team, especially down a few injuries, wouldn't have. And to even add on to that is Temple No beat Kilcommon yesterday in the relegation match. So now Kilcommon are down intermediate. Who's Kilcommon players available for? East Kerry, who are going to win 2 in a row more than likely. I don't know if Kerry are starting to think that. I don't know. Football's gone so strong in Kerry. The club football has gone so competitive. And that's normal enough after winning 9 minor All-Irelands or 5 minor All-Irelands in a row. That kind of most clubs have, an injection. There was huge work obviously done in the clubs at underage level. And now the club teams are just way too strong maybe to go into these divisional teams.
What a really good problem, him saying we nearly have too many players. How many people can say that? And that sort of shows it, what you're talking about with the extra time. You're right. Once a team gets a goal in extra time, usually that's it. The other team barely scores half the time. They just down tools and give up because 3 points in extra time and it's done for. But when you have so many players and they're probably a lot of them at the same level, and you can just call upon to freshen up the team, then it does make a change. And with Kerry, I remember when we first talked about this, I was thinking, geez, do they need to split up East Kerry now? But like, that's actually such a natural way of doing it, just allowing more clubs into the senior championship, and then they're not available for East Kerry then, you know, when the clubs are getting a better shake.
Yeah, exactly. That's the natural thing to do with it. So loads of drama in the Kerry Championships. Kilkenny semi-finals on TV on Saturday night. And there's more drama here because James Stevens put in a heroic performance. And their manager, our own Cheddar Plunkett, joins us on the line now. Did you get your breath back, Cheddar?
I might have my breath back, but the heart not back fully. No, those type of games are sort of bad. Look, everybody is sports people. It's not just me, and it's not just Jim Stevens. They're gut wrenching ways to lose matches, and they just empty you, I suppose, for a couple of days. But I suppose on the flip side of that, that's what makes winning, so much more appreciable when you do win. And that, the downs are massive downs, and I suppose the highs are massive highs. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, that was it. I was getting emotionally invested in it. I'm a Shamrocks fan, but I was shouting for James Stevens on Saturday night, and you were bent over the railing at the end, Cheddar. You couldn't take anymore. Like it had gotten so exciting.
Look, anybody who's involved in sport just knows that you totally invest yourself in it. And that's just us, my real feeling is for the players, and the investment that they put into it, and knowing it's been a very, very tough year with COVID-19 and all of those things, and to come into Nolan Park, in Kilkenny, it simply is, they will certainly regard it as the home of hurling, and there's an awful lot of people who would agree, and play the double All-Ireland champions, and have the beating of them just coming down the straight, and not just see out that, having invested so much of your life and your personal life and time in it for the players, it has a massive impact on you. And I suppose it just wasn't me. They were just my feelings at the time that, we had it and we just let it slip. We probably just let it slip away. And I'd say there's not too many times you're going to get an opportunity against the Shamrocks like that. And I suppose just the way the game went as well, Wally, sometimes you might, score a lot of goals or something like that, but this was different. The Shamrocks started really, really well. I think they led by 8, scored 2 goals, and we were doing our damnedest to cut down the goals. Yeah. And yet they scored them. And another time, teams might buckle and throw in the towel and that. Instead of that, I suppose the team thundered into the game I think we might maybe score 9 or 10 points on the trot. It wasn't that we got 2 or 3 goals to counter that. We actually scored points. But more than anything else, got to grips with the Shamrocks, I suppose, our tackle count and our winning loose ball and that breaking ball. All those performance figures, went off the charts during that period. And even tackles. And even, I suppose, the Shamrocks started to foul a little bit under pressure when we went to them and that. So frustrating, really, to come back like that against maybe one of the best club teams of all time, and then not just to see it out when the opportunity was there. That's the real killing part of it, I suppose. There's a really gut-wrenching part of it.
Yeah. What did you change at that first water break, Cheddar? Because it was after that first water break you were the 8 down, and looked like this game you could be nearly thinking about maybe just flicking away, this kind of a thing. Mm. Were you dropping a midfielder back a little bit spooked by Reid
We thought a lot about it beforehand. We did it on the puck outs, and incidentally, towards the end of the game, this got turned around on us. And we went full court press on puck outs at that stage. We were playing with the breeze, I suppose, and they weren't coming as much down our throat. But we just made a couple of positional changes in the team. But it was up to the players. There was probably a couple of positional changes that did make a huge difference. But the huge difference was every single Village player decided, I'm not what's going to leave this behind me, and I'm just going to empty myself here, my own performance here. And everybody raised their game. And took the game to Shamrocks. And, as I said to you, all of the performance statistics from then on, were weighted heavily towards our favours. And to the extent even that Shamrocks started to foul a lot during that period, that sort of showed, it was probably a combination of things, but more than anything else that, the players dug really, really deep. I suppose I'm just going back to that point, that's the gut-wrenching part of it, that, when you reach that far into yourself, for a performance all over the field, and you get it, continue to drive on, and then just towards the end, you just don't see that out. That's the really, really, you know, that's the real hard pain in this game.
And I suppose, like, it's in a terrible twist, it was Tadhg Dwyer who was man of the match and who was absolutely brilliant. He's a great bit of cutting in him, Tadhg has. He had that 59th-minute chance where he went for the goal instead of putting it across. And I suppose maybe, is that the difference, Cheddar, that bit of experience maybe that your lads need to gain?
There is that in it. Like, Tadhg was, you know, he's a fantastic player. He was heroic in the game, as all the players were. I'm not going to single out one player here. And when I say that, I'm also giving due credit to Shamrocks. It was a brilliant game, 3:22 to 1:26. I think that was a huge lot of that was from play. But yeah, Tadhg had a chance for a goal. He probably had two chances for a goal. I think one of them that he went for went up the field. I think maybe Brian Cody got the equalising point. But look, you can fit that on the other side too. You know, he had tore through the middle. Things had opened up for him. You know, if he had executed the goal, the game was definitely over. And then you'd be saying, Tadhg took the right choice here, you know, made the right decision. Yeah. But probably towards the end, certainly, you know, this was in overtime now, you know, so that's how crucial these things are. You'd probably say Shamrocks were just a little bit more clinical in front of the goal than we were. These were very, very fine margins. And even there were some small factors in that. Shamrocks had the win in the second half. And most of their scores probably came from Dean Mason's puckouts. So they were able to go at a distance. You know, they were probably landing, you know, in the middle of the D in terms of distance range at that. And, you know, earlier on in the game, you know, we had dropped and we had a man dropping on the puck out. So that probably, you know, would have cured that at that time, except this is the second half and there was 2 or 3 minutes in the game at this stage and we were still driving on and going to win the match at that.
Yeah.
So there was even just the wind factor, you know, normally the wind factor is a big determining factor in performance and that, and it can be in hurling at times, but in this instance it was as simple as that, you know, we'd score or you know, the ball would go wide and we just probably maybe missed a couple of wides at crucial time. But you know, I always say, Willie, like, you know, is the point at the end of the game any more or less important than the point at the start of the game? You know, we had opportunities other than that to win the match as well. And look, it just didn't go our way, I suppose. It was just, I suppose, that the level, the savagery of the effort was, you know, you don't see that often. And then just to come away with nothing, I suppose that's the piece that hurts the most.
Yeah, I suppose you're not one to give out about referees, and a free in the first minute, like you say, always is the same as a free in the last minute. But Jesus, that was it. The picking the ball up off the ground, that was some call from a referee at that stage of the game.
It was, but look, I'm not even going to go there. Just very, very glad. I know I mean this. I've been on the record of saying this. Look, there has been some matches where, you know, refereeing clearly wasn't right. You know, this wasn't one of those matches. And, you know, I could argue that the free on David Walton out, that was probably a worse decision. It was on the Shamrocks full back line, but they had the breeze and it was going to land them up on top of TJ and Colin and that. But yeah. I know myself that when I look at the video, and if I was the Shamrocks manager on the other side, I'd say, God, that was a fairly soft free there as well. You know, these things start to be equal. People are human here, and Owen lets the game flow, as most referees in Kilkenny do. And when I've been on the show before, and, you know, we can't be two-faced about this, Willie, and say one thing on one day and a different thing on another day. When you let the game flow, there are going to be, the referee's going to make some mistakes one way or the other. And generally speaking, these things balance out. It was a difficult one to take. It was right in front of the goal. You know, giving a ball like that to TJ, sure, you might as well give him the pint, just take the puck out and that. But we're certainly not going to whinge over that. We had the opportunities to win the match ourselves, so, you know, let's not lay the blame anywhere else.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. We all know how good TJ Reid is, but is there a more effective full forward in club hurling in the country than Colin Fenley?
We didn't need to know a club. Like, you know, Colin's been doing this for a while. And, you know, the interesting part about it is, you know, Shane Donoghue, this was his first year playing fullback for us and was great last Sunday and will be the fullback for the Village for a number of years. Very, very young player. It was a little bit unfortunate 4 or 5 weeks ago. He got a knee tendon injury and hasn't had a chance maybe to then. It hasn't done very little training, in fairness. But he actually played really well on Colin and, you know, fronted him for a number of balls and that. But look, Colin's an experienced player. Look, you know, he's not all-star material. You don't win those against, you know, a top intercounty forwards, unless you're a serious player. And I think it's a little bit more than Colin. I think it's the interplays between TJ and Colin and their understanding. Because when you see most of the goals are scored by one or the other, it's nearly always an assist from one to the other. It could be role reversal in the county final down there. You know, so you're trying to manage two players. And look, I've said it on the show before I was even involved with James Stevens, that in my view, you know, for TJ to come from where he came from in the same club as Henry, and to be, you know, I probably think he's a technically better player, and to now be, you know, probably regarded as the best player in Ireland. Well, you know, it was a fantastic achievement for him. And, you know, he is a serious, serious player. And when I say that, Niall Braswell played centre back for the Village last Sunday, and in my view, I think he missed maybe 5 or 6 points that Niall would score. But he doesn't score a high percentage because he's a very, very good long-range player. And, you know, we had tried to develop that throughout the year.
His radar was definitely off. Brazil, he got on load of ball, but he supposed maybe he was going. He went for a lot of scores, and like you, if you say he usually would get them, I kind of understand why he was going for them.
He certainly would, and you know, maybe, you know, people might say that we should have asked Niall to, you know, play the ball in a little bit more, but look, this is what he's good at. But I would say, you know, right up to the last 5 minutes, that Niall Braswell was potentially man of the match. He was absolutely awesome in terms of what he could do. You know, and it was just unfortunate that goal came in. I think when you look back at it again, you know, Niall just tapped down all the ball in front of TJ, so he just wasn't able to catch it. And just at that particular time, he probably overran a little bit in front of the ball, and the ball went in over him, and TJ caught it behind him. And of course, then he's a free run to go to be able to pop past the Colin and that. But Niall Braswell was just brilliant at that. But look, TJ is, you know, he's been doing this for what, 6, 7, 8 or whatever number of years at this stage. And I thought that the Village held them really, really well, and they held them by playing them. You know, there was, yeah. You know, you will not, you're not going to beat a quality team like Shamrocks or any quality team by anything else other than, you know, good hurling tactics or good technical players and that. And you know, I think the Village would have been very, very happy with an awful lot of things from Sunday, but obviously devastated about the loss, and particularly the way of the loss.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, Cheddar, Jackie Tyrrell said on RT after the match, he said it's very important for this team's development to keep you on board. Any news for us on that?
no news on that one. It's not just me saying this. You know, any manager will tell you this. There's a credible commitment even at that level. You know, senior club hurling in Kilkenny is, and in any of the top counties at this stage, is comparable with inter-county commitments. And you know, everything in these clubs is geared towards winning. You know, so you've got to match that in terms of your commitment and all around you and that as well. And look, the other flip side of that you know, that's really ultimately a matter for the team and for the club. But there's a lot of things to be considered in that. It is huge commitment. And this year, maybe in a funny sort of a way, because of COVID, probably maybe even more so, because, you know, a lot of the time you go training. So that's your interface with the team and that. But the interface this year was maybe a little bit different right throughout the lockdown and all of that. So there's a lot of things to consider and things like that. But, you know, I certainly could not speak more highly about the club. I certainly could not speak more highly about the hurling environment that you're playing in Kilkenny, and the expectations about winning, and the, you know, I suppose just the proper preparation about how to win and all of that. It's just everything is geared towards that. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, Willie.
Probably not, Cheddar, but we'll leave it there. We'll be talking to you. We'll be talking to you soon when the intercounty season starts back up again.
Yeah, no, that's good. Looks good. And it looks good that it is starting back up. I think an awful lot of people are looking forward to it. And I think there's going to be a huge amount to be talked about for hurling and football. Obviously, I'm a hurling man, you know, about how the club championship have started this year. There was a couple of things before I go, Willie. There's a couple of things. The pity about last Sunday, and I'm just talking about our own match, because, you know, there was a cracking games all over the country. And I'm going to mention one of them here. The Mayo County Final, Ballyhaun, and the performance of Keith Higgins, and we were talking a lot about TJ You know, I wouldn't mind talking about Keith Higgins hurling in the Mayo County final either. I think he scored 9 points or something like that. So I think there's going to be very interesting conversations about the way the team, because of the experience of this year and the learning from this year, about maybe about how the team might be set up for future years based on what we've learned this year. And the last point I'd make is I think there's a huge amount of thanks to be given to people who stood on gates and who handled tickets and COVID officers and all of these, all volunteers, all putting themselves in danger. Not a whole lot different, to be honest with you, the frontline staff and so on and so on. Huge amount of thanks to them from hurling people for being able to facilitate a championship to go ahead in the first place. And that, they were just my experience in Kilkenny. I'm sure that, you know, people in Leash and Cork and Tip and Carlow and everywhere else, all the hurlers in those places would be saying the same thing. They don't get credit often, but I would certainly like to see this year that, you know, we give out all stars to players. I'd certainly like to see the GAA do something to recognise the work that COVID officers did and that ordinary officials did and be able to facilitate games like last weekend to allow them to happen.
Fair play to you, Cheddar.
Let you go, Willie.
Great stuff from Cheddar there, lads. I miss Cheddar. That's it. I'm going to say, like I mean, lads, I like the two of you, lads, but I love Cheddar.
Cheddar.
I need Cheddar. Like, I mean, listen, like, this is the difference between us numpties and Cheddar Plunkett, who is a great GA man, and we're just mouthpieces. I make a laugh of COVID officers, Conan. Cheddar wants an all-star to be given to all COVID officers. I think that sums up the difference between a gentleman and me.
And you're right to call him a gentleman, because I was surprised that he didn't go at Marty Morrissey. I was so annoyed listening to Marty Morrissey at how surprised he was that James Stevens were doing well. And his first question was like, Cheddar, you gave it everything. It's like, of course we gave it everything. Like, we're trying to get in the county final. And Cheddar was just manic as ever and as gentlemanly as ever. And as you say, he doesn't be drawn on any of the crap like we tend to be drawn on.
No, he definitely does not. The big one in Limerick saw Napiershig beat Patrick's. Well, this was the repeat of last year's county final, and it was a convincing win for Napiershig, no surprise. It was 125 to 17 points. Patrickswell had a man sent off. Napiershig forward line, Peter Casey, Connor Boyle and Kevin Downs, two current Limerick forwards and an ex-forward. And then William Henn, Adrian Breen and David Dempsey. David Dempsey, a current Limerick forward. Adrian Breen has been in the mix, I'm pretty sure. And William Henn scores all the scores from freeze. This is no Shane Dowling taken out of that forward line or maybe midfield. Like, I mean, this is a super club in the Napiershig, and I can't wait for the Napiershig to play Ballygunner. It'll have to be next year because we've got no Munster Championship. I can't wait for the Napiershig to play Ballyhale Shamrocks in an All-Ireland semi-final or All-Ireland final. We won't see that till next year as well. I'm starting to feel a little bit bad we don't have provincials. It is kind of the natural follow-on from it, Conan. And it does feel a little bit weird when these super clubs are all making their county finals and this is the stage of the year I'm starting to match them off against who they're playing in the provincials.
Like, that's it. Like, when it's super clubs, yeah, it doesn't make sense that their seasons are just, like, you know, especially when you're, like, coming from the national media, like, you're looking at these big teams coming through and thinking, right, what's next for them? And it doesn't seem right. Say if Napiercy go on and win this next week against Dún. It's on RTE, actually. They're loving with the Munster hurling is continuing. But if they go on and win it, it's like, oh, well, they're finished. Like, you know, it just doesn't really stack up. And, like, yeah, you're talking about the forward line there. When I saw the Patrickswell cornerback was sent off with two yellows in the first half, I thought, yeah, well, there's that makes sense. That's what a good forward line does to the cornerback who's under pressure. But, yeah, it's a shame that could be it, and I hope they do bring it back at the start of next year.
Yeah, huge upset in Clare. O'Callaghan Mills. Lads, I have to hold my hands up and say this is a bit of a roar in his tiog and say I had never really heard anything about O'Callaghan Mills before. It's Pat Donnellan's club. He was captain in 2013. They beat Ballyhale. They scored 1-3 in injury time. It's their first county finals in 93. The first time they'll be... If they win the county finals, it'll be the first time since 1937. So sensational. Mad story. Almost relegated last year. Brought in a new manager, Donnach O'Donnell. He's a Limerick man. And he's turned them completely around. And he made an interesting point. He said, we had a few weeks done before COVID hit and it was hard. Once we got back in again, we were in smaller groups and you got to know them a bit better. They're a great bunch and the club is really strong. We get on great as a management team and they know the lads inside out. So I was kind of thinking that, you know, all these new managers were dealt a really bad hand with this COVID. He's putting a more positive spin on it, Conor, in that, right, the groups became much smaller. We had more one-on-one time with them. We got to know the players an awful lot better. And again, this is a man that's living it against us just kind of maybe theorizing about it.
Yeah, exactly. You would have thought that that what's happened with COVID and stuff would go against somebody, that's, especially somebody from an outside county that could have to come in and manage another team because their access to the players was so restricted. But I'm sure, Willy, there's probably been a couple of maybe Zoom calls and stuff like that, maybe one-on-one and individual groups, maybe whether backs and forwards and stuff like that to let them get to know each other a little bit better. But it's just that the story is massive. You know, that they were on the verge of going down, and to beat a kind of giant like Ballyhale, especially with Tony Kelly scoring 1-8. It's 1-8 or 1-8 in total, or maybe 1-8 from play, I'm not sure. But just the manner in which to do it as well. And just something I was thinking about as well, with kind of, I don't know, is it the case that with smaller clubs, or with, you know, I think that the longer a season goes on, I think that you're the bigger a chance that the bigger clubs have for some reason. Whereas if you have a cause to fight for over a shorter period of time, I think it might suit smaller clubs like O'Callaghan Mills. So, but yeah, what a win for them, and especially under the circumstances. Again, I think they picked, did they hit 1-3 in injury time or something like that, with Pat Donnellan scoring the last score. So more drama again, which there has been plenty of for us, thank God.
Yeah, exactly. Tony Kelly got 1-8, and 1-8 of it was from play. So you're right on both. Of them there. So the Donegal final has been decided as well, lads. Kilcar surprisingly beat Gweedore convincingly. No real drama there. 14 points to 1-6. You know, the big three are Kilcar, Gweedore, and Naomh Connell, and probably Unions, all made the semi-finals. But all the drama was in the Naomh Connell St. Eunan's game, which went to extra time as well. Jesus, we'll talk about it in a second, Les, but how much drama are in all these club games? Like, it's incredible stuff. Between the extra time, late scores, comebacks. Again, a TV show with all these results firing in. You get nothing else done all weekend, wouldn't you not? Like, I mean, you'd be just completely addicted to all this stuff coming in, and, you know, you'd end up getting divorced or whatever kind of would have to come along with that. But anyways, the big talking point in the Eunan's one was that this went to extra time. Union's Naomh Connell. Union showed a lot of character and scored the first 3 points of extra time. And like we said, you know, in general, if a team goes three up or gets a goal in extra time, you know, you're looking like you're in a really strong position. But Naomh Connell got a goal, and the goal was from Leo McLoon. And it came in from, it was a long ball, Ian. It was an attempted point, really, that probably dropped short. This is very interesting. So Sean Patton caught it above his head, which is the right thing to do in that situation. And in the time he took to get it from the top of his head down onto his chest, Leo McLoon had rushed in, punched the ball out of his hand into the net, followed through and took Patton out of it. Now, I think the referee deserves a huge amount of credit for the call in this, Conan, because I think he got the call right. But a lot of referees would have given a free out there, because we know, you know, the minute you touch a goalkeeper in around that small rectangle, generally they're given a free. But I'm sure McLoon had that ball fisted legally out of Patton's hands and into that net before he followed through and knocked Patton into the net as well.
Like, honestly, I haven't seen as clean a connection with a ball from a tackle, yeah, you know, yeah, all summer. Like, it was perfect. They caught it so flush. Like, it didn't look like there was any foul on the keeper in that rig. Like, and the only thing that I was looking at was he shoved off somebody just before he jumped in on the keeper. Like, and that player went down. It wasn't a foul, but he went down. He lost his footing. And
yeah,
the ref was looking at that. Or, like, you know, all the people were looking at that. Sorry, but no, I think the ref got that right.
Yeah, because there was some sort of contact with another Union's player, and if there's an argument to say it should have been disallowed for that coming together, but that wasn't picked up on the camera, you know, well enough to be able to determine what happened there. But the rule is, when the goalkeeper is within the small rectangle, the goalkeeper may not be charged, but he may be challenged for possession of the ball, and his kick or pass may be blocked. Now, that's the actual rule. So he can't be charged. I presume you come in and you can't shoulder charge him. You know, that's the, to protect him from being charged back in over the line, Conor, I presume. But this was, the ball was dislodged out of his hand into the net. It's different. And then he was charged, I suppose.
Yeah, so the one incident that came to mind when I heard about them and I saw it was Sean Quigley on Stephen Cluxton a couple of years back. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Sean Quigley, but Sean Quigley physically pushed Stephen Cluxton over the line after he caught it. Now, that goal was allowed, but like I think everyone agreed afterwards that it shouldn't have been, because as the rule states, as you've just gone through there, he charged him with the, you know, he pushed him with his two hands over the line. But this is completely different. The one thing I have sympathy for Sean Batten is that his feet hadn't even touched the ground by the time Leo McLoone got the fist in. So he had no time to set himself for anything. He was still in the air and the ball was in the air. And Leo McLoone made, as Conan said, absolutely flush contact with it. The only thing I was thinking of was, could he maybe have caught it in his chest? But looking back again, the ball was too high. He had to catch it where
he did. Too high, yeah. Yeah.
Catch it over his head. So, like, I have sympathy for Sean Batten, but, like, at the same time, I think it was absolutely the right call. And I don't think it was a foul on the Unions lad beforehand either. I know the footage doesn't catch it great, but to me, it just looked like a slip. So, like, it's unfortunate on Unions, but to me, that's a goal all day.
Yeah. And like we were saying a few shows ago, if he had jumped up and taken that into the chest, you know, there's a good chance the ball momentum could put him back behind the goals. Like, I mean, that happened in another game that we were talking about. Where was that, lads? I think that was up in Antrim, wasn't it?
That was in Down.
Up in Down. In Down. So, yeah. So, look, more drama there. So, how much extra time, how much late comebacks, how much drama have we seen? Absolutely loads. A few other notable results, Les. Lockmore Castellani beat Mile Rovers. They're on course for the double. My team in Westmeath, the Downs were beaten. They were 8-3 up at halftime. There must have been a wind in that game. They lost 13-11. Great young team, the Downs, lads. So keep your eye out for them. Not a young manager. So my team, the Downs, my team, Ken Mayer, my team in my hurling team in Cork, Sarsfields were beaten. Lovely young forward line there. So they were beaten by their close rivals, Éireann's Own. So that's another notable one. In Laois, another notable result is Rosan Ellis, who beat Boris Kilcotton this time, another favourite for the championship. So not only did they knock Camras out, to go beat Boris Kilcotton now. So they have ensured that Boris Kilcotton have to play Rathdowney in the semi-final, which they would have been kept apart. And Rosan Ellis now play Clough Ballacolla. So, like, I mean, I don't know, Conan. Like, I mean, this show has become impossible. I'm starting to think a hurling show and football show need to be split out to get everything. It's fantastic time of the year. And again, we're only starting. We've only had two or three county finals to start off with. Like, I mean, the next few weeks are going to be fantastic before inter-county season starts.
I can see the hurling fans around the country now just nodding and saying please when you're saying script. We're losing track of your teams, Willie, as well. Like, that's when you know we have to start. can we publish a full list of them? Like, I want to know who your team is in every county.
Well, I have a graph for a team at the start of the year, but my teams don't do well. So if you hear that I'm rooting for you, you know, you're pretty much finished. Like, pretty much is what we can take from this. It's very rare. It's very rare a team that I like ever wins anything. Right, one other bit of news, lads, before we finish up, is that obviously today is September the 14th. Inter-county squads can start training again today. So there's loads of players available now, obviously, to most counties are at county final stage. I think we're going to be seeing county finals ticking heavy for the next two or three weeks. And happily enough, the GAA confirmed on Saturday that the inter-county season will go ahead. They need some financial assistance. So there we are, Conan. Like, I mean, we're looking at a situation where so much was uncertain. We've had the you know, the worry that the club season won't go ahead, went ahead behind closed doors. Now we know that the inter-county season will go ahead. And RT Sports are reporting this morning that they're going to change the spectator ban as well. So 500 can get in at club level and 5,000 for larger venues like Croke Park or the Aviva Stadium. So, like, I mean, it looks like the penny is dropping with NetFet and the government that let's start living with this and don't punish sport.
Yeah, and you can get a few thousand to Ballycastle anyway if you're struggling for a club. but yeah, like, that's good. I actually think if it all works out to plan, hopefully it doesn't change, but the GAA will have played this perfectly. You know, the club game or the club game coming first is obviously put the attention, give them the spotlight, and it's been class, like the championships. But the county game coming second now has allowed more supporters to come back in, and if they can get 5,000 into games, then they're going to make a bit of money that's really badly needed. So if it all pans out like that, it will have played brilliantly for the GAA.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, without finishing on a note giving out, there's still an awful lot of contradictions in this whole thing, Connor. So as August the 18th, supporters were banned. So, you know, the new cases with this coronavirus has been, you know, rocketing since. Counties have gone into localised lockdown. Dublin looked like they're next for a local lockdown. Now they're going to allow 5,000 into larger venues. Like, I mean, you know, Dr. Ronan Glynn cared about what supporters did before and after matches. Has that all gone by the wayside? Is that being forgotten about now? When there's going to be a bit of consistency with the decisions being made? Like, are the 500 allowed at club level? Are they in a local club ground? Or what, like, if Laois play in a Moor Park, 5,000 can go. But if the county final is in a Moor Park, there's only 500 allowed. There's still an awful lot up in the air. There's still an awful lot of frustration at how these people, as far as I'm concerned, seem to be making it up as they go along. We were in a much better position in August the 18th than we are now, you know, as regards the control over new cases. And now all of a sudden they're changing it back that now supporters are okay. And now will Dr. Ronan Glynn be even challenged on how come it's okay now? You know, what's going on here? Like, why is this all changing at the drop of a hat and there's no consistency to what's going on?
Yeah, and it's those contradictions with which kind of, you know, it raises valid questions, but it makes people, you know, you're not as content to go along with the message as you were maybe at the start, where you understood what you were doing, and there wasn't as many contradictions and stuff, and you could accept it if it was all for the greater good. Whereas you've just mentioned the timeline there of about 3 weeks where they've been flip flopping on numbers and all that sort of stuff, and designations related to certain grounds. I was reading that, so it was like I saw that you're allowed 500 at club level, but you're allowed 5,000 at grounds like Croke Park and the Aviva Stadium. So obviously Croke Park is the biggest ground in the country, but like there's county grounds that have, you know, the same capacity as the Aviva Stadium. So 5,000 are going to be permitted at, you know, maybe say a rugby match at the Aviva. Why wouldn't 5,000 be allowed at a county final? Now, I know that's probably to do with the, you know, the attendance for a rugby match would normally be a full house at the Aviva Stadium, whereas it mightn't be for a county ground at county final, but still, it's
irrelevant, really.
I know, but that's what I mean. It's irrelevant. It still raises a valid question that the numbers are just being flipped out of thin air, really, as opposed to any logic really behind them. But I suppose the one saving grace is that, like, if we are granted this tomorrow, which they're due to publish this roadmap tomorrow, that we could be looking at county finals in the Republic of Ireland with 500 at them over the coming weeks. And like, just as I said earlier on, I think, even though it's only been 400 people up in Northern Ireland, I think that the contrast between having nobody at games at all and 400 has been massive. So if we see that, if we get to see that at county finals over the next few weeks, that's great, even though they still haven't explained the contradictions in the regulations that they're putting out there.
Yeah, I hope they do, because, like, I mean, it's not sure I'm giving out when club supporters are finally being allowed back in. I'd be more frustrated at the teams that have won county championships without having anybody there. Like, I mean, and how can they stand over that decision but say this decision's okay? And then you have the people blindly just following these people like there's some sort of, you know, like everything they do is exactly right and they're saving lives, etc. Anyways, listen, we'll finish on a positive. County final time, inter-county training is back. The championship's going ahead and Cheddar will be back soon for the hurling supporters. You can't leave it on a better note than that, lads. We'll be back on Thursday and we'll talk to everybody then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.